I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Over the last year, through my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next couple of weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire me and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. I am so thrilled, over the moon, to introduce my next guest, my friend and RTE presenter, Tracy Clifford.
Hey, Georgie. Thank you so much for asking me to come on the Good Glow. It's my favourite.
Oh, Tracy, like, I've really wanted to sit down with you for so long on this podcast, so I'm so glad you agreed to it. And I just think you just have such a great story and everything you've been through in the last 10 years, and you speak about your decade of change. And I just think the Good Glow listeners will really connect with you, and I think you can share so much with them. So tell us a little bit. I suppose everyone will know you from the radio. You're on 2FM every day. You used to work in Spin on The Breakfast Show, and which that's how we know each other.
Exactly, yeah. And can I just say, though, like, I've been listening to your podcast, and I've been, you know, obviously your friend since we've met in Spin when you were working in the newsroom. We were working in the newsroom together and our many nights out on Spin. But when I found out that you had cancer, so long ago now, I suppose, like, it's 18 months ago now, is it?
Yeah.
And it's your, I've been obviously been in contact with you and watching your journey, but I've never seen you look better. I've never seen you glow so much. It's amazing. This podcast is called The Good Glow because you are glowing. It's like, it's so amazing to see you in such good, full health, George. It really is.
Thank you so much, Tracy. And you're one of the people that I always say came back into my life when I got sick. Like, we'd kind of lost touch a bit and just day-to-day life, like, we were both working in different radio stations. We always had such a laugh when we were together. But then when I got sick, you know, you were there for me so much. You were always at the end of the phone. You were always sending me things in the post. And honestly, it meant the world to me. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Not a bother.
So it feels like a full circle moment that, like, we're back here. I'm, like, healthy again and we can just have a lovely conversation.
Yeah, great.
So, yeah, tell us a little bit about, you know, how much has changed for you over the last 10 years and all the changes you've made in your life.
I think, well, where I am now, like, I work in 2FM now. I am engaged to be married to Mark. I live in a different suburb. And when I look back at the last decade of my life, like, you know, if you look back, so this is like 2019, 2009, oh my God, completely different life, different job, different relationship, living somewhere else, like, different expectations and different dreams of what I wanted for my life. I think I was in a relationship with somebody else, and it was a lovely relationship at the time, but I was always fulfilling somebody else's dream in that relationship. And I made a big change. I decided I was going to get married. And that was 10 years ago, about 7 years ago. And it just didn't feel right. And so I had a really hard time admitting that to myself. And I think from that moment onwards is where I decided or learned who I was as a person. But, and I thought that was it, but actually it wasn't at all, to see what happened, you know, in the next couple of years after it. To make a decision for yourself, I thought, was very, very selfish to leave a relationship. I thought, everyone kept saying, you're so brave to make this decision. You're so brave to not go ahead with the wedding. I wasn't brave. I felt selfish. I felt I was doing it for me and nobody else. And when I look back at it then, I thought that was a bad thing, where actually, no, it wasn't. It was the right thing to do for both of us. It really was the right thing to do. But from that moment onwards, I had a lot of guilt. And then from a lot of guilt, you don't really like yourself that much when you have a guilty conscience about something, about hurting somebody that doesn't deserve to be hurt. You don't forgive yourself. You really don't. You feel, okay, listen, I've made this decision. Everybody's telling me it's a brave decision, but I feel like a selfish person.
And I remember those conversations. Like, I worked with you on The Breakfast Show at the time. I was reading news. And so how many days were we in the bathroom together? And I was definitely one of those people that was saying you were brave, because you were brave. I thought you were standing up for, you know, what you knew deep down in your heart that was the right thing to do, was not to go ahead with it and to go and find yourself. But I suppose we all did think it was your forever. We all thought, you were going off to get married. And
that's kind of the thing that, you know, when you're growing up and you're in school, like, you know, we're all as females kind of conditioned to find your partner. Mm-hmm. You're conditioned to, you know, oh my God, the dream wedding, the fairy tale. And you're conditioned to, when you're in your 20s, you should be out there finding your match rather than finding yourself and finding out what you want. So after that, I thought, you know, okay, I know this is not what I want. So I got into another relationship really, really fast afterwards, because I kind of feel, when I look back at it now, my self-esteem was quite low coming out of that other relationship. And this relationship that I got into was what I call my rock and roll relationship. Like, when I think about it, it was like crazy and hedonistic and good fun. And I don't regret a bar of it. But in time, that relationship became a little bit of, I would say, a codependent relationship, because I was dependent on him for love, self-esteem, affirmation. He was dependent on me, possibly for the same things. But, you know, when you're in a relationship, you learn about the other person, and we're mirrors of each other to each other. And what I learned in this relationship was, and again, like my past relationship, he is fundamentally a good person. But what I learned is that he was more committed, he belonged more to his demons than he belonged to me. And when someone belongs to the demons, you cannot get through to that person. You can help, you can suggest help, but if somebody will not help themselves, came to a point when I went to a doctor and I was like, my hands are shaking, and the doctor wanted to prescribe me anti-anxiety medication. And like, that's great when you are anxious and when you have anxiety, but I didn't have anxiety. Somebody else's behavior was making me feel this way, or making me stressed. So when they wanted to prescribe me that, I was like, no, hang on a second. This is to do with somebody else. So the biggest self-care thing I did for me was to take myself out of that situation. That was my first step for self-care, was leaving a relationship that wasn't serving me in any way emotionally. It wasn't fun. It was damaging my mental health as well.
And was that hard to admit to yourself?
Like, once you're my friend, you're my friend. If you're my boyfriend, you're my boyfriend. I will go by hook or by crook to get you everything you need. I am a loyal person. So for me to step away from that, to make that decision, like, I would have kept on going. But one day, you know, he'd said something to me that was the last straw. And I remember roaring and going, stop, please listen to me, please. And I remember going to my counsellor at that time, and she was like, enough, you're shaking, enough.
And was there a time that you were maybe suffering in silence and people kind of thought you were fine?
Yeah.
Like, you're the best at putting on a brave face, Tracy.
Like, when you work in radio, you have to be happy. You're like, hey, welcome to my show. Like, my mom, every single day, I used to call her going, Mom, I can't go on. I can't go on. I can't do this. I can't pretend I'm happy when I'm dying inside. There was a point where I was going to bring up the fader and turn my mic on and tell everybody what was going on. My mom was like, hang on now, stop. Stop. You know, there's sharing and there's oversharing. But I was alone on the radio. I had nothing but songs. And you know, have your happy clappy songs as well, or else you can have the songs that will make you start bawling, crying. So I had to make sure I took them out of the playlist, you know. But my mom every day gave me a pep talk in the car park of RTE. She was on the phone and she was like, you need to go on the radio. This relationship is over. Let's draw a line under it. But we're here. Your friends and family, your listeners are there. And she was like, treat this as like your 3 hours meditation, where all you think about for the next 3 hours is your listeners, the music you play and the fun you have.
Wow.
I guarantee it, after 3 hours, you'll feel better. And she was right.
your mum is your best friend, always has been, and so is my mum. We used to talk about our mums a lot, and your mum has gotten you through a lot, hasn't she?
Yeah, 100%. And like the thing like I love about my mum and hate at the same time in equal measure is that she's always bloody right. She is always right. But my mum is like a tiger. You know, she'll fight for her cubs. So she'll do anything in her power to protect you as her child. And even like, you know, you're me, late 30s, she's still there. She is still there. And like, she let me fight this battle alone. But she also was there all the time at the end of the phone. Like, she wasn't, you know, getting involved in my relationship or telling me what to do. She was making me make my own mistakes, but was always there to pick up the pieces. But she... every day, you know, at like 11:30, she'd call me and go, "How are you?" And I go, "Mom, I can't do this." And she was like, "You have to go on air. You cannot let this situation beat you. You have to do this." And like, I didn't want to do it. I wanted to go home to bed and pull the covers over me. I wanted that time, but she didn't let me. She was like, "You have to do this." And she was right. At the end of those 3 hours, I did feel better. You know, I took myself out of the situation. I couldn't look at my phone. I couldn't answer a call from somebody who was like inquiring about something to do with my past situation. It was just my time. It was my playing songs, feel good songs, meditation.
And do you feel like your mum is like almost like you could literally tell her anything? You know, it must have been hard for you to go from the first relationship and everyone going, "Oh, that's it for Tracy." And then the next relationship, "Oh, that's it for Tracy." You must have been like, could you even admit it to yourself? So then she was probably the first person that you could really turn to and tell the entire truth to about how you were feeling. And because mums don't judge you.
No, like not at all. Like, and here you are again, mid-30s, another failed relationship, you know, and you want to make sure that your mom's not worrying about you anymore when you come to that age. You really do. And you don't want, you want to be looking after your mom now rather than her looking after you in that way. So I felt a little bit of shame actually coming back and being like, "Mom, this is, I need you." So she was supportive in that sense. You know, she was supportive in every sense, But yeah, she was. She was brilliant.
And swimming also is therapy for you, isn't it? I remember, you know, you always say going swimming, especially when there's no one else in the pool and you just put your head under, and that got you through.
Yeah, like, it's so funny. Like, I'm there swimming and I'm crying at the same time. That should be an Olympic sport, you know? You're like, yeah, that was my meditation, mindfulness, you know, because you're just counting the lengths that you're doing all of the time.
And did you just pick that up, or have you swam for your whole life?
I've been swimming, I'd say, about 10 years. No, I've been swimming for about 10 years. Like, I just used to like the passive way water felt. The silence of water when you dive your head underneath water, and you can go for your own pace, and you couldn't hear your heart beating if you were going too fast, where sometimes that would annoy me if I'm running. Mm-hmm. But when you're swimming, you can't hear that, and you're just lost in your own rhythm. It's lovely. It's really, really nice.
Tell me about the year of dating yourself.
Well, when I decided that, you know, I couldn't do this anymore and I had to spend time on my own, I used to go and look for meditations on YouTube, and I found a gorgeous meditation by Marian Williamson, who wrote a book, Return to Love. And I know in your past podcasts, Claire Solans talked about that book, and I found that book, and there were sentences there that just spoke to me, like things like, "Don't fan the flames of false drama." And I remember underlining that, just being like, don't fan the flames of someone else's drama anymore. This, you've got your own life. This is, you need to do things for yourself. And then from that, I found talks of hers online. And then one day I just found something in the scroll bar, and it was a girl called Tracy McMillan. I've never heard of her before. She was American. It was a TED talk, and it was like, how you should marry yourself. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. I'll just have a look at this. And this is all about this woman who'd been through 5 or 6 marriages. And she was like, I needed to marry myself. Before I could marry anybody else, I found out that I needed to date myself before I could marry anybody else. And the dating yourself was like, if you can imagine, all of us are looking for the fairy tale. All of us are looking for someone to make our lives better, or to give you the fairy tale life, and to be maybe the rich person, or the most funniest person in the relationship, or the person that everyone thinks is sound, or someone that just is brilliant. Where actually, why can't you be that? All of those things. The successful person, the rich person, the person that everybody wants to hang out with, or, you know, the most loving, kind person to make you feel good about yourself. And I came out of two relationships where, one, I had low self-esteem coming out of that relationship, where number two relationship was that I didn't give myself any time or any self-care because I was looking after somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I was looking after them all of the time. I didn't give myself anything. So I needed this in this relationship. And watching this TED talk, it was like, a man's not going to give this to me. I'm going to give this to me. I'm going to look after myself. I'm going to date myself. I'm going to be the person that makes me feel good through whatever way it could be. It could be exercise or whatever. And it really resonated with me. So I took myself on a journey of dating myself, and I wrote about it in U Magazine, and everybody thought I was crazy. And I mean, when...
And did you tell people you were doing this?
Well, listen, come here. I can't do anything without telling somebody about it. I'm like, no, sorry, I can't come out tonight. I'm dating myself. And like, my friends were like, oh, here she goes, you know.
I'm in the bath.
I'm
in myself.
I'm dating myself, you know. So honestly, what do you do when you go on dates? You go to the cinema, and you go to nice dinners. You go on holidays when you're dating somebody. You go for weekends away. I did it all on my own.
You did not.
I did. And that's scary. Like, I went, the first thing I did, actually, the first thing I did, I took myself on a stroll to Wicklow on my own. And I remember I was walking in these bushes, and it was like 5 to 6, and it was October, it was getting dark. And I was like, yeah, okay, Tracy, you're taking this a bit too extreme, go back. You know, no one knows you're here. So
you talk to yourself on your dates.
I was like, yeah, you gotta come back here now. So, you know, went back to the car. I was like, yeah, maybe hang on. Don't do these kind of extreme things on your own. If at least do it in daylight. So that was the first one. And then I was like, you know what? We'll go to Poolbeg Lighthouse instead. Broad daylight. So I went for walks there on my own. Really, really windy days. And that, I felt great because I loved that place as a kid. My dad used to bring me there as a kid. So I loved there. And I hadn't been there since. And I got it on Google Maps. And I was like, you know, but I got there. And I felt like, you know, this is somewhere nice to go. Yeah. On a date with Tracy, you know. So, and it's not supposed to be funny, but it is.
Yeah,
it's so funny because I would never do this. Like, you're. Then I went to the cinema on my own.
What was that like?
Like, and I remember wearing a cap on my head because I just was like, in case anybody sees me. But do you know what? I got myself like my little bag of Maltesers. And my cup of tea, because I was drinking tea in the cinema. And I sat there and I went to see a movie in the IFI about like Oasis, the band.
Wow.
And I loved it. And I sat there on my own and I was afraid to laugh because if I laugh really loudly, people might turn around and say, oh, that girl's on her own. But I loved it. I was like, actually, you know what? I chose that movie. I chose that I wanted to have whatever goodies I wanted to have in the cinema. I didn't compromise, kind of going, oh, no, no. Because, you know, as girls, mm-hmm. we always compromise.
Yes, all we always the time.
Go, oh, I don't mind. I do bloody mind. I want to go see this movie and I want to have this.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to get the largest popcorn. And I don't want to kind of go, I'm going to eat three of them because somebody might judge me on a date. I was on my own. And so I didn't compromise anything. Another date I did, I went and had a body massage,
wow.
you know, and then I went and said, I'm going to buy myself a nice top today. And it was taking like 4 hours out of my Saturday afternoon and just spending it on my own.
And did you feel week after week a difference?
I loved it. Like, I loved it. I just loved, how am I going to treat me? And like, when I wrote the article for U Magazine, mum's got in contact with me kind of going, I'm going to do this.
Because yes, you don't have to be single to do it.
No, not at all. You can be in a fully fledged marriage for about 10 years, 15 years with kids who are constantly looking for your attention or looking for your help or guidance or love. But you need to, I say need to because this is how I feel about it now. take time out for yourself. And there's no guilt involved in this. You need to do this to know who you are, to learn about who you are, to learn what your needs and wants are. Like, I went on holidays for a week to Spain on my own.
Wow, Tracy.
Scariest thing I've ever done, because, you know, when you're on holidays, like, that's where you get to know people. That's where you meet people. Not one person talked to me. I thought they would, but I had great books at me and I lay on the beach all day, and it was kind of lonely. It was. But I learned that I was okay on my own. And that was the biggest thing I took from it. I am okay on my own. And if I meet somebody again in the future, amazing. But if not, yeah, I'm pretty good, all right company. There was one part, like, I was sitting in a restaurant one night reading my book and I had my dinner. I remember sitting there just being like, I'm really okay with this. This is weird, because I was really apprehensive going on holidays on my own in August to Spain, you know, where it's milled with people. Loads of couples, loads of families, loads of girls on holidays together. And I was sitting there and there's a group of girls. I was sitting in a restaurant. There's a group of girls. There was families. There was a guy and a girlfriend. So there was a romantic holiday happening, the family holiday, the girly holiday, all happening around me. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, no, I'm okay being on my own here. And I could see these girls looking at me, and I don't know whether they pitied me or wanted to enjoy or wanted to ask me over to their company. But I remember just being like, no, I hope they just see that I'm actually enjoying my company on my own. It's okay.
That is amazing.
It's the scariest thing I've ever done.
I never knew that you did that.
Yeah.
And for the whole week, were you thinking to yourself, I'm by myself, I'm by myself? Or were you doing that more at the start and then you were more comfortable with it by the end?
Like, when I came at the start, I was like getting all my friends to text me on WhatsApp and get my mom. My mom was like, how are you today? Who's putting cream on your back?
Who did?
I kind of just lay on my front for a bit, so in the shade a bit. But, like, yeah, no, nobody did. Like, I wasn't going to go up to a stranger and go, hiya, put some cream on my back. But I was in the shade, so it was okay. Yeah. I went for swims, came back. Like, it was dodgy when you're looking for somebody to mind your bag when you go for a swim, like, whatever. But I went for swims every morning in the pool that was, like, part of the apartment that I was staying in. I had a little routine.
That is
had a
so
routine.
Fab.
And by the end of it, because it was scary at the start, at the end of it, I wanted to do it again. And I was like, I need to do this every year on my own. Like,
and do you think you will?
I haven't since, you know, but I am very, very protective of my time on my own. I revel in my time on my own. I take myself off the grid. I turn off my phone. I love when I have my apartment to myself now, because I did meet somebody, and that's actually, it's funny, like, when he asked for my number, I was like, no, sorry, I'm dating myself. Like, I'm sure at our wedding speech he's going to bring this up, or his wedding speech he might even bring this up, because it's such a joke to us now. But no, I was dating myself for a long time.
So there was a bit of convincing there to get your attention.
There was a bit of convincing for me to break up myself, because I was loving it so much. I learned so much about myself. I learned that, like, my boundaries are crossed in past relationships. I learned that when I'm in a relationship, I'm a giver. I'm also the person that wants the other person to be great while forgetting about yourself and your wants and your needs.
I think it's so easy for that to happen in relationships.
Yeah.
And without the other person even realizing that maybe that's happening, like with Jamie, I would always say to him, no, you go to the gym, or, you know, you have this, or I'll eat the burnt potato. I'm really like that too. And then I got sick, and then all of a sudden now I'm like, no, I need to do this right now. And he's more than happy
and it's
for
okay.
me to do that.
Like, the world doesn't end when you actually speak up and say, do you know what? I need time out. I need to go off on a walk on my own. I need 2 hours on Saturday morning. Is that okay? Especially to women with kids or men with kids. You do need to, you can't lose yourself, you know? You can't lose yourself. Because if you do, oh God, like, you know, you don't know yourself anymore. And like, you might not become happy.
Do you think that year then allowed you to be your true self?
Yeah, 100%. Like, what I've learned is that nobody has the power to make you happy except yourself. You can't, if you don't love yourself, how can you love somebody else? And if you have things that you want to explore yourself or find out about yourself, you can sometimes do that in a relationship. unless you have your boundaries. You know, like I, in my relationship now, I always remember when Mark was saying, are we boyfriend and girlfriend now? You know, doing that whole thing. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And it, I was ready after the whole dating myself thing, and I let him kind of call me and stuff. But we had a friendship first before it became a fully fledged relationship, which was brilliant for me after the trauma of the last, you know, couple of years. And I remember him saying to me, you know, there was two things that he said that made me realise I'd changed so much as a person. He said, you know, oh, now that we're boyfriend and girlfriend, like, God, you're probably going to want to change me. You're going to want to change me now. And I was like, you know, that thing of like, in relationships, girls want to change boys, and you should do this and you should do that and change your way you clothes and stuff like that. I remember I was like, oh, no. Like, I don't want to, like, how would I ever want to do that? You're you and I'm me. And if I need to change you, that means we're not compatible. Whereas in other relationships, I did want to change people's behaviour and I did want to change things about them because it wasn't suiting me. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh God, no, I know who I am so much right now that if I wouldn't want to go out with you if I needed to change you.
Yeah, you do you, and do I'll you. Do me.
And I remember myself telling my mom being like, isn't that unreal? That's amazing. That's how confident and solid you are as, like, confident and solid in who you are as a person.
Mm.
That's everything is non-negotiable now. You know, if this doesn't suit you, then we're not going to be in a relationship.
I remember thinking that about Jamie when I first met him, that I didn't want to change anything about him. I remember that was kind of a standout thing to me.
Yeah.
But I was like, he's actually like just perfect for me.
And that's it. And then same with Mark. Like, you know, there's nothing I would change about him, to be honest with you. You're like, there's nothing I would. So it means that we are compatible. But the fact that, like, you know, if I had to change something, I'd be like, actually, do you know what? I'm not getting into this. You know, in my late 30s, I know who I am now. I'm not changing anybody. The only person I'm looking after in terms of changing and improving is myself.
Mm.
And if you want to get on board with that and have a great time, great.
It's amazing.
The other thing he said to me, you know, which made me realise that things have changed, was that he was like, you know, you make me so happy. And I remember kind of going, thank you. But I don't want to make you happy. I want you to make you happy. And if you're happy, I'm happy. I'm happy, you're happy. And that's, you know, I can't make you happy. Nobody else has the power to make you happy except yourself inside. Everybody else is a fabulous enhancement and bonus to your life.
Oh, it's just such amazing words, Tracy. You read the book, The Universe Has Your Back.
Yeah.
Yourself. Claire Solon actually gave me that book. I'm about a quarter of the way through.
It's hard
at the
to
moment.
Read.
Yeah, I kind of just pick it up now
me
and again.
Too. Me too. I find it hard to read, but I went to go and see Gabby Bernstein in London. I flew over myself and my friend Eva. I'm all about the universe. I'm all about positive affirmations and trusting the universe and surrendering. It's really hard to do when you're having a bad time in your life, but it gave me hope. You know, I wrote down what I wanted. 3 days after I decided to leave my last relationship, I wrote down what I wanted in my life. You know, it came through. It came true. Like, it really did to the detail. It really, really did.
So you're engaged now to Mark.
Yeah.
Who, every time you say his name, you smile, by the way.
Do I?
Yeah.
Oh my God, he can never listen to this.
Are you so happy?
Yeah, I am, because, you know, I am. I'm content. We are great pals, but we have both been on journeys. We've both had turbulent times in our life and we both got through them alone. We weren't codependent on each other. And yeah, we found each other. And we found each other at an age where, like, we're like, this is me. This is who I am. So yeah, no, it is great. He's brilliant. And yeah, we're great pals.
Did you find it weird that so many people were interested in your engagement to him? Because, like, you know, the papers covered it. How is that for you? Is that weird?
I think it's kind of like par for the course with me working in 2FM. I think for him, he probably found that very strange. So I tried to keep that as private as possible. But then again, the outpouring of love when you get engaged is so lovely. Like, the good wishes, the well wishes, everybody. It's so lovely that all you can do is probably accept it. Like, and again, you know, it's not news that's going to be out there forever. We're going to get engaged. We have a set our date and everything for next year. So we're all in that planning mode and stuff like that. But no, it's just, if anybody wants to celebrate love and happiness, I'm all for it.
Do you think you're in your dream job at the moment?
Yeah, like working in radio, you know, it's a privilege. Mm. It's a joy and it's a privilege to play music that you love, to talk to people who are working during the day and you're being the soundtrack to their working day, or they're waking up in the morning or going home in the evening. It's just an honour, you know, like it's such an honour and a joy to be able to do something I love and get paid for it. You know, it's not like people kind of think it's a vocation or anything like that. It's an honour. You know?
I think you've always connected with your listeners in a way that people, they talk about you like they know you. They obviously do know you. But what I mean is, like, my friends would say, oh, Tracy, because you just have this kind of connection with people. I think it's because there's no airs and graces about you. You're just one of us. You're just normal.
I think, yeah, I'm not different to off air, on air Tracy and on off air,
yes,
Tracy,
that's
the same thing.
What it is.
And I just said to myself in the third person there, which is really embarrassing. But no, I'm the same person. Like, yeah. You know, I used to be a newsreader like you, and you'd put on a different sort of authoritative voice, mm-hmm. because you're telling bad news or you're telling important politics. So when I am on the radio now, when I was with Ryan, we were like two mates. When I was on with you and you were our breakfast anchor, like we were talking about your goldfish, you know, which was crazy. You need to talk about that story again.
Yeah.
But we were, you know, we were just mates having a laugh. And I think that's, yeah, that's it on radio, isn't it? You're just, you know, a person whose job it is to play songs, to let everybody have a nice day in work. Because if everybody connects through music, so you go, oh my God, I love that song. Trace up to playing that song. Great. Fab.
And do you miss your time in Spin? Like, it's such a moment in time almost, isn't it? Those years.
It was magic. Spin at that time, Ryan and Tracy, us two on the radio with Rory, Georgie with the story. It was magic. It was a magic time.
It was amazing.
It really was.
I feel like we all almost grew up in there.
I think that time of all of us together in Spin, we all grew up together. We had no airs and graces about ourselves. We were all striving for a fantastic thing, a product that we all loved. It's different when you go national because you kind of have to find out what the whole country wants, you know. But that's the challenge that I love as well. And I'm connecting to people outside Dublin now, which is, my God, as I said, like if it was to all end tomorrow, I'd be so grateful for the opportunity, because it's such a privilege to be given a job like that. Long may it continue. It may not. And if it doesn't, that's OK. I've had a great old time.
And then at the weekends, then when you're away from work in your apartment, how do you relax? Like, what do you do during your me time?
Me time, it's yoga, meditation, spin, or it's not spin. I was going to say spinning class there, but gym. Me time is chilling with myself, reading and chilling with my boyfriend.
And did you find meditation hard to get into? Because I found it really hard to get into for so long.
When I was in my crisis phase, I read this book by a girl called Glennon Doyle Melton. And she wrote a book called Love Warrior. And I never heard of meditation before or breathing exercises before. I heard of meditation, but I thought it was all chanting. And I know Sheila Shoga is into chanting, but I've never tried that. I was kind of more into the stillness and listening to your breath. And when I read her, Glennon Doyle Melton's book, she was in a crisis mode of something going on in her life. And it's a really, really good book if you're trying to find out when you're breaking up with somebody. It's a really good book because you're trying to find out what you should do and stuff like that. And so I'd highly recommend it. And she calls herself a love warrior. And she said that when she was in crisis, crisis is a Greek word for sift. So if you think of sifting sand, so if you're sifting sand, it's very hard to say sifting sand. If you're sifting sand, you're kind of looking for some treasure, all the little grains of sand, and you're sifting. So you're looking for something in a crisis, and treasure always kind of comes through. And so she said that she found that through meditation. She went to a breathing class. So I was reading this book and I was clutching at everything, any sort of advice people were giving left, right and centre, from the marrying yourself, Tracy McMillan talk, to The Universe Has Your Back by Gabby, Marianne Williamson, Return to Love. And then I found this other book called Love Warrior. So she went to a meditation class and I went to one. And she said that through breathing, she let go. She cried. She forgave people. She came up with ideas. So I used meditation after reading that book. I went to found a breathing class or a restorative yoga class, I found. So that's all about nourishing you, nourishing your body, nourishing your mind and letting go. I did find it hard because I had so much going on in my head. But I wanted this crisis sifting. I wanted to find this jewel, this thing from the crisis in my life. And breathing was where I let go. I released. I thought of new ideas. It was stillness. It was just through. Yes, it is hard because your brain is constantly at you, you know, and your thoughts aren't real. You know, I learned that from reading other books, that your whatever comes through your mind is like sometimes your own brain is your own saboteur, like it's a sabotage happening in your own brain. So how to quieten that takes work. How to still your mind takes work. How to just breathe, and concentrating on the counting of your breathing takes you away from your crazy mind.
And that's why I meditate now, is because when I got sick, and even more so over the last couple of months, like in my recovery, it kind of got a little bit worse, the kind of panic attacks, and this movie plays in my head of like the cancer coming back, or, you know, just terrible things happening. Like, I haven't said it before, but when I went, myself and Jamie, to Tenerife 3 weeks ago, I didn't want to go because I was so afraid something bad was going to happen to our family, because I think I was so traumatized by the suddenness of my cancer that I was like, we could go away and anything could happen, and life as I know it, I've just gotten back on track, and then everything would fall apart again. And it is all post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's why I've turned to meditation, like you said, to stay in the now and kind of just to quieten your mind and block out the noise.
And it's not easy to do. Like, it's not easy to do, but that's the thing. Like, if you keep on working at it, it distracts you from the crazy thoughts that are coming, the negative thoughts that are coming into your brain, the what ifs that are making you worry. And worry is just such an empty thing, because it's nothing. It's your brain slightly playing tricks on you. It's okay to have concerns about things, but, you know, when you get still and try to calm your mind and not to panic and to breathe and to dispel the negative thoughts that will always come into your brain. That's just who we are as humans. We have to fight those the negative side of our brain off all of the time. That's who we are. It's really hard to do. It's a cognitive ability. You have to learn it. I think it should be taught in schools. You know, mindfulness should be really, really taught in schools.
Oh God, I agree so much on that, Tracy.
So yeah, meditation is breathing and meditation. It is hard to do, but it is worth it, definitely.
And what's your advice then for anybody listening to this that maybe is going through a tough time?
Taking time out for yourself, whatever way you can. It could be meditation, it could be going for a walk, it could be going to the cinema on your own, like I did. It's to make sure that in your weeks of hours, that there are some hours dedicated to you, because you really need to make sure that you know yourself. And if you look after yourself and your mental health while dealing with other people, or while dealing with any situations in work, or caring for your loved ones, or just being in a relationship, once you look after you, everything else falls into place.
Final question. What makes you happy?
Wow. What makes me happy? Music makes me happy. Music makes me happy. Music elevates my mood. Laughter makes me happy. And giving people compliments makes me happy. Yeah, that would be it. Yeah, just being and just trying to live as best we can.
Because I do think that you've always had happiness. You know, you've always had a smile on your face. You always made me happy as one of your friends. I you know, every day that you came into work, like you're funny, you're a fun person to be around. And it's amazing to see how much you're evolving as a person and how wise you are. And thank you so much for everything that you've shared with us today, because I mean, I think people are going to get a lot from it. I really appreciate it.
And thanks to you as well. This podcast is helping so many people. And you, when you were going through your cancer treatment, like you came out and spoke about it when you were at your lowest. Like, you know, you were rock bottom in terms of like panic, in terms of what am I going to do? And you were on national radio, TV, magazines, telling everybody to check the breasts. I don't think I could have done that. So thank you. Seriously.
Well, Tracy, thanks so much. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new episodes. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story and follow me on Instagram @GeorgieJCrawford.